All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Can you see it? Did you know
this? Checked, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
Moments know. Adams leaves
to the line. Hughes scores.
Yes, existence. Take you to the sun.
First career NHL goal. Quinn Hughes makes it 1-0.
Here. Like I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted them in Valentine's Day.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Public display.
They slayed the dragon.
It is existence.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. My name is David Quadrelli, and as always, I am joined by the man who built the place, Chris Faber. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I might be the man who built the place, but you're at the place that we built now. You're back in the studio. How cool is that to get back on the Roadcaster? And maybe the audio quality will even be a little bit better.
Well, it's a little dusty, so I came in, dusted it immediately, because it has been a while since we've been in here. Like, last time we were in here, and longtime listeners of the show, I know we have a lot of new ones, appreciate that, by the way. Longtime listeners of the show will know we built this studio when coronavirus happened, and we could no longer go to BCIT, because that's where we were doing the show when we first started it in January, or sorry, when I first joined on. So we have this Roadcaster, we've got some nice equipment, we love it in this studio, but we haven't been able to use it because we're like, yeah, maybe let's not hang out and sit in a closed room with not great ventilation together for an hour and do a podcast. So we've been all doing it all remotely for now, but hopefully as, you know, vaccines roll out and the numbers start to go down, we can get back in here. Cause man, there's nothing like sitting in the same room doing the show. Like that, some of our best moments have happened when we've been in this room.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. It's, man, yeah, I can't wait till, like, I just hope that we get back to somewhat normality in the summer, like, you know, start to get these vaccines flowing through, and so we can get back in the studio, because, yeah, I think the podcast is a lot better when we can see each other and react off of each other's, you know, I guess the way that we move or talk about certain points. Like, it just seems to add a lot to the podcast, I think, in the end. So, here's to hoping that, that it gets better, because you know, we don't talk about it often, but man, it's on the back of your mind all the time, just like waiting for the world to get back to normal. And one of those things will be being back in the studio, so we'll see. Maybe they'll open up the 6-person bubbles again in the summer or whatever we're at. So I'm excited for it, man. A lot more excited for that than I am about this Canucks team right now. It's been it's bad. Things are bad.
Yeah, let's talk about this Canucks team, Chris. Things are bad. Blowing that lead last night. I saw, okay, here's the thing. A lot of people have been talking about, oh, it's going to be an uphill climb to make the playoffs, and they can do it maybe, but I saw a lot of people last night get really dejected about this team and just like, you know what? Maybe this team just isn't good. That was what I was seeing a lot of people saying, and it's hard to disagree with them when they're blowing leads like they did last night. Here's the thing, Chris. To make the playoffs, they're going to need about 63-65 points. That would require them to win 22 games, 11 losses, and like one overtime loss in that. That's what they need to do. They're already, I think, 40, like, they're almost, like, their season in the calendar sense is, like, very close to being done, I think. Like, there's about a little more than halfway to go. Like, it feels like just yesterday we were talking about opening night, and don't worry, they can still turn this around. The top line's going to get going, all this other stuff. But man, maybe the team's just not good. Like, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think this team, the way that they sit right now, are going to have to perform basically at the level that we saw the 2010-2011 Canucks team perform at throughout the whole season. I mean, the Canucks are going to have to win 2 out of 3 games for the remainder of the season to have a chance of making the playoffs. And that's a tough spot to be in for a team that I think for a while we were getting to a point where it's like, okay, this team is digging themselves into a hole, but here's what they have to do to maybe get out of it and still make a run for the playoffs. And now it's at the point where you really needed a big showing against the Jets, and to take 2 L's against the Jets is a tough spot to put yourself in. I just think that this team has showed that they are capable of looking like a playoff team. I think we've seen that over the past 2 weeks, to be honest. And I think that's what's gotten us to the point of maybe being a little bit more negative than we were even 2 weeks ago, because the team has now been playing good, having good possession numbers, playing a game that Travis Green wants his team to play, and it's still not good enough, right? Like, it's still not good enough to go out there and win 2 out of 3 games, it feels like. And I know the Canucks have had probably the hardest schedule in the NHL to start this year. I mean, they've played a ton of games, still more games than any other team in the league. And that's something, right? Like, that's not just nothing. That's definitely something you have to take into account. And maybe that helps them later on in the season, as they have obviously less games to play than the remainder of teams, or at least less games scheduled anyways. But yeah, this is a tough spot to be in, because a lot of things aren't clicking for the Canucks like a lot of people were hoping for. There's top to bottom, you can really go anywhere and start to say why this team isn't looking like a playoff contender, because of the forwards, certain things on defense. I mean, even the goaltending now you could talk about. It's tough. Like, I want to be optimistic. I want there to be playoff hockey. It's good for us as people covering the team. Like, we don't root for the team when we're at the games, but man, like, it helps everybody covering this Vancouver Canucks team when they are good, and that's what we want to see. We just want to see a good team. We want to be able to cover a good team. It's something that Botch preached, like, all the time. Like, this market deserves to be able to talk about a good hockey team, and unfortunately, unless they're an absolutely amazing hockey team for the rest of the season, which is going to be tough from what we've seen so far, it doesn't look like playoffs are really in the cards for the Vancouver Canucks, unfortunately. It's a bad feeling, because, like I said, they played good. They played good, and they still weren't good enough to get wins on games where they really needed wins.
I want to ask you a question, Chris, because they're about 40% done their season. And, okay, this is going to come across as overtly positive, but who is your X factor to turn this season around? Who do you think the Canucks need the most out of? Like, who can single-handedly carry this team into contention once again? And I know it's going to be tough, but who's your X factor?
Well, it's maybe Jacob Markstrom. I don't know. he was the MVP last year for a reason, and you're seeing a lot of that. I look back at the game, and even just looking back at last night's game, like, Braden Holtby lets in some bad goals. That goal against Mark Scheifele coming down that sneaks through him, that's a tough goal. That's a save that you need to make. I just think that we saw the big blocker save that he made when he dove across to his right side, made a great save, and that was great. Like, but the Canucks need like four of those a game, right? Like, you can't just have one or two. Unfortunately, the way this Canucks team plays, you need four of those. You need Thatcher Demko-like playoff performances for this team to really go on a run. And I want to be positive. Like, I really do. I try and be positive a lot with this team, but there's a lot that's just set them up so bad where the roster construction has limited so many of their good players and potential to have good seasons, and there's no support coming from them. I mean, all the money that's coming from these guys, you're not getting enough support from them. So I think an X factor for the Canucks, to answer your question in a roundabout way, like, who... like, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I think maybe JT Miller turning around to what he did last year would be a huge step for them, but I don't think that's enough to get them into the playoffs. I think it would have to be on, and I hate to do it, but, like, it's kind of almost on the young guys in Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser to just be elite, like, to be some of the best players in the league. That's really what I think could get this team into the playoffs is... if somehow Pettersson really just starts scoring at a ridiculous rate. And I want to talk about the power play a little bit once we get into this later. But if you can start to get one of the best players in the league on your team, then I think this team has a chance. And the potential's there, right? Like, Elias Pettersson could be one of the best players in this league, but he's going to have to do it, like, right now with the players that he's playing with right now on this team and the defensemen that are supporting him in the offensive zone. And unfortunately, I don't know if that's going to happen because of the circumstances of where this team's at and what they really are facing in such a strange season that's been, you know, derailed really by COVID and made it such a strange thing up and down, top to bottom. Like, it's made the season different. It's made series different. It's playing just the same six or seven teams every single game. There's a lot of things that are just adding up to making it a lot harder for the Canucks to really get back and do a playoff run right now.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. But the X factor question is an interesting one to me, because the person I think that really, if anybody's going to do it, I think it's Thatcher Demko. Like, I think we've seen signs, and I'm looking at the 1-0 loss where it's 2-0, but he let in one goal. I'm looking at that game and saying, okay, you can't win when you don't get any run support, but if the Canucks score a goal in that game or don't make a brutal turnover at their line, well, that was weird how I said that, brutal turnover at their line, Thatcher Demko is bailing them out. Like, Thatcher Demko is carrying them to a victory in that game. I don't know. I'm not trying to say that Thatcher Demko needs to be better. I think Braden Holtby needs to be better. I think Thatcher Demko is this team's starter. I think that much is clear, as it should be. And I think... when you have two goalies like this, you need them both to be great, but you can also, when you're getting desperate, you can rely on one of them to be great and the other one to be good. I think of what's going on in Montreal with Carey Price and Jake Allen. The Habs really wanted to shore up their goaltending situation, so they went out and got Jake Allen. It's paid off so far, but Jake Allen also lost in overtime to the Ottawa Senators yesterday. I get it. They got to score more in front of him. But I'm looking at it and almost thinking, like, this is kind of what the Canucks have. Like, when we talk about the best tandem in the league or whatever, or sorry, in the division, you know, it's probably Montreal. But Jake Allen's nothing to write home about. He's a solid goalie. And I think Braden Holtby can give you that solid goaltending, but I think you have to roll with Demko from now on. And I think that being said, if anybody's going to come out and just bring this team into the playoffs, I think it's going to be Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and I'll go off a side story a little bit, because it's funny that you bring up a goaltender. I was at the game last night, the second game against Winnipeg, and I ran into Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, who I know you talk a lot with, and I told Kevin, I said, I'm mad at you, Kevin, because you've converted Quads to only wanting to talk about goaltenders all the time now, so I told him I was pissed off at him about that, and of course you bring up a goalie as the X factor, but to your point, you are right. I mean, if Thatcher Demko were to be able to be, again, it's a similar situation to what my point was, though. Like, Thatcher Demko would have to be one of the best goaltenders in the league for this team to get back in the race. Like, he would have to put in an elite performance night in and night out as one of the best goaltenders on a regular basis for this team to get back into it. And that's a bad thing. Like, I look at this team and I look at Brock Besser, point a game, Quinn Hughes, just under a point a game. And I think, like, wow, that's great that you're getting a nice jump from Brock Besser and Quinn Hughes. Offensively, you definitely are. I'm worried that the team isn't able to kind of back that up. Like, you know, having 16 points from Elias Pettersson in 22 games is great, but it's shown from the record so far that it's just not good enough, unfortunately, for this team. Like, it's good. It's a great performance from Elias Pettersson. He's playing good games, especially lately, and just ripping that shot, hitting so many crossbars, unfortunately. But it's like, for this team to really be considered a playoff team, a guy like Pettersson, and you don't like to say it, but like, he's going to have to be better, unfortunately. Like, it's a lot to ask on this kid, but if that is your goal, if your goal is to make it to the playoffs, you need more from Miller, you need more from Pettersson, you need more from Horvat, you need more from really everyone. Like, you're getting it from Brock Besser, I think, and offensively you're getting it from Quinn Hughes. But you need more from everyone, not only the bottom six guys, who at times have put up decent amount of goals, and we've seen what Tyler Motte and Brandon Sutter have done early on this year, but really, you're going to need better from everyone. Like, it's not one guy that's slacking. It's everyone that needs to make it better, and that might be something back to your point about the goaltender. Like, if the team does play better in front of you, it's a lot easier for a goaltender to start to get some confidence when the team is actually putting up goals, instead of, like, the first game against the Jets. Thatcher Demko has a great game, a game where the Canucks probably should have won if you look at simply the goaltending performance, but they don't get a goal. Like, how can you win a game if you just can't put up a goal? So it's everyone. Like, it's top to bottom. The X factor for this team, it might have to be every single player.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like I get it. I get what you're saying. The team needs to come together and they need to play better. At the end of the day, that's what it is. Like, it's so funny. We sit here and we listen to the radio and we listen to everybody else talking about it. And, you know, not everybody, but there's a lot of people out there that are like, man, what's going on with this team? Like, why did they lose that game against the Jets where they lost 1-0? And really, like I said this before and I'll say it again, like, they just have to finish. They got to finish their chances. And I'm sorry, it looks like this team, whenever they want to play really solid team defense and buy into their system, I look back at Vegas. It looks like they just can't score when they do that. When they focus on playing proper defense in front of their goaltender, they just can't score. So it's like, do you want to score three goals but also let in three goals? Or do you want to play some defense, let in one or two, but then you can't score at the end of the other end of the ice? Like, you need both. You need both from this team, and they're just not getting it right now. So with that in mind, Chris, one guy whose name hasn't really come up a lot, and, you know, we're both pretty big fans of him, we think he's a good coach, is Travis Green. Do you think, at what point does the finger start to get pointed at Travis Green?
Yeah, I think the finger's been wagged in his direction a little bit early on this season, specifically during that six-game losing streak, but it's got to go up a level for me, to be honest. I think that Travis has got this group where you have a guy like Elias Pettersson, a guy like Bo Horvat, where that's your top six centers for a long time. You have Quinn Hughes, who's, you know, going to be one of the best defensemen in the league at producing points. And then you have a little bit of a surrounding core in Besser and Miller and, you know, Pearson and Höglander and these guys, and they look good. But after that, it's really a lackluster rest of the roster, right? And I think that you can get a lot out of this team if you're able to just squeeze it for everything that it has. And Travis Green has been able to do that as his time as the Vancouver Canucks coach, but he doesn't have the weapons to do it. You know, it's like going into the war with a bunch of Nerf guns, right? Like, it's tough to really go and win a battle with a bunch of Nerf guns. And that's what they have really in their bottom six for scoring. They're not able to contribute enough. And I wonder if, it's something that I talk about a lot, like looking at the whole of your top six compared to looking at the whole of your top nine. like, is an option out there where you give JT Miller the third line and you switch things up, right? Like, would a third line of, you know, JT Miller, Adam Gaudette, and whoever else you want to really throw in there, maybe Zach MacEwen, like, does that make your top nine more able to score goals against teams? Because right now, if you go up against the Vancouver Canucks, you put your best two, your best two defensive pairings up against the top six lines, you put your defensive lines up against them, and if you can limit them and just not let them outscore the crap out of you, you're okay. Like, you're okay. Like, if you can just say, okay, let's let our bottom sixes go to battle, the Canucks are going to lose that most nights. So I think it's more to do with the roster. I think Travis Green is the coach of this team. And I've had my criticisms of him in the past, and he's proved me wrong where, you know, I think he is a good coach. I think he's a great NHL coach. And I know that a lot of people are going to point fingers at him because he isn't able to get the best out of this team. But man, he's proven to me that he can get the best out of this team. It's just like you said right now, they're playing good hockey, but they can't seem to find that last gear that's going to push the puck past the goal line and get you the goals, because they're getting scoring chances, they're controlling possession, and they're not winning games still. And I think that's the most unfortunate thing about this team right now, is they're playing good hockey, but not getting enough goals to win, it seems like, on a nightly basis.
We've said it before, but I think it's worth noting again. If the Canucks do let Travis Green go this offseason, he's not going to have trouble finding work. Like, it's not going to be a situation where we're sitting there scratching our heads, oh, why hasn't this guy been hired? It's going to be, he's going to coach next year in the NHL. I guarantee it. He is either going to go to a team like Anaheim, again, we've mentioned that's where he lives in the offseason, or Seattle, right down the road. Like, Seattle's going to be looking for a coach. And until they hire a coach, or the Canucks extend Travis Green, this is going to be a talking point. Like, maybe Calgary. Look what's going on in Calgary, man. They have no control right now. Jacob Markstrom's getting lit up. They're not playing with any heart in front of him. And man, it sounds cliche, but it just looks like they've given up on the coach. And I'm trying to stay somewhat in tune with what's going on over there. And it really just, it's a tire fire in Flames country right now. And you think Vancouver's bad, but man, with the personnel that the Flames have, like, they don't have the best offense, but man, when you have Jacob Markstrom in net, you should not be losing. Like, I would say the Flames are an objectively better team than the Canucks were last year with Markstrom in net, right? And now they have the same goaltender. They're a better team up front than the Canucks were last year. And now Markstrom's getting lit up. Like, man, I've watched the games, and not all of those goals are on him. Like, it's the same song and dance with him. Like, it's very few of those goals are goals that he is going to save on a nightly basis. And that's saying something, because he's still making spectacular saves. I get it. I get the save percentage isn't nice, but man, you got to look at the quality of the shots, and man, the Flames are just, like, it's bad right now. And I know a lot of people in Calgary are calling for a change. Maybe it's Jeff Ward that goes. Travis Green might be available this offseason. So again, it's something to consider. And man, like, when we just had an offseason where Canucks fans are, you know, having nightmares about Tyler Toffoli going on a John Wick revenge tour against them, and the Flames signing everything that used to be a Canuck, like, you know, they're targeting Mark Donnelly, they're targeting Finn. Like, when does it end, right? They're going to go after their Baker with Louis Domingue, and now they might go after the coach. So it's just, you never want to put yourself in a situation where you had this coach that you developed. You know, you don't usually use that term when you talk about coaches, but this is a guy who was with the organization, worked in Utica with the younger guys, came up, proved himself, got you through the playoffs, nearly got you past Vegas because he got his guys to buy into his system that he was selling, and he kept, you know, it's not on him, but man, he was instrumental in them getting that far against Vegas and keeping all those shots to the outside. Like, yes, it's on the players to buy into the system, but man, it's just like, he's going to get hired right away. That's my point that I'm trying to make, I guess. Yeah. And I don't think you want to put yourself in a situation, because all of the teams that I've listed so far, Chris, guess what? They're all in the Canucks division. Next year, if the Pacific comes back, Anaheim, Seattle, and Calgary, all in the Canucks division. So you're going to see a healthy dose of Travis Green once again.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a situation that we can talk about later in the season, I think. And it's Yeah, it's not a lot of great things, and I think it just comes back to the fact that the Canucks are playing better hockey and it's still not good enough, right? I think that's where we're at. I want to spin it a little bit to some positives, maybe just a little bit to take away before we go to break and send to Corey here. But I did enjoy, and you didn't get a lot of ice time out of them, but what the Canucks put together on a fourth line the other night against the Winnipeg Jets just in this most recent game of Jake Virtanen, Zach MacEwen, and Jay Beagle really were not in their own zone at any point in that game against the Winnipeg Jets. I think just one shot attempt against in their 6 minutes of ice time together. And I know that's not a lot of time, and it obviously isn't. I mean, Jay Beagle, I think, was under 10 minutes, and he even had penalty kill time. But that fourth line, I think, is a good setup for a fourth line. It really is. Like, it's going to give Jake some pretty easy matchups against the forwards and defensemen that he's going up against to maybe utilize his speed. Zach MacEwen's going to bring a ton of energy, and Jay Beagle's going to be a fourth-line center. And I think that, you know, it's too bad that I'm picking at straws here just to, like, get one positive, and I'm talking about the fourth line. But that could be something in the future that I'm okay with for the Canucks, is what they're going to put out on their fourth line if they kind of stick with that trio. I think it's a fine fourth line to put out there.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, they were due to change it, because we saw a few games of Louis, and man, Louis wasn't even doing the little things when he was out there. Like, in those games, he was making poor passes, he was not causing turnovers, he was producing turnovers. Like, it was not good. Those were bad games from Louis, even to his standards. And man, you tune into Toronto radio or whatever, you watch the discourse in Toronto, they're complaining about William Nylander right now. Like, that's where they are right now. They are complaining about William Nylander in the Toronto media scene. Could you imagine if they had Louis, or if they have Jay Beagle, or if they had Antoine Roussel, all these guys making this much? Like, they're mad about William Nylander. I just don't get it, man. It's tough. It's really tough to watch this team, I guess, when you know that they could be so much better. Like, think of if the Canucks didn't have these guys on the books, those guys I just listed. Like, what could they put around Elias Pettersson? Like, you know what? You're looking at maybe signing Taylor Hall this offseason to a 1-year deal. Instead of him having to go to Buffalo, he plays a full season alongside Bo Horvat or Elias Pettersson. We've talked so long about getting Bo Horvat a proper winger. Tanner Pearson's fine. But man, Taylor Hall's on another level, and that's like a 1-year deal. That would be perfect for the Canucks. These Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, last year of their ELCs, you give them Taylor Hall for 1 year. Like, it's just a layup. It's right there, and the Canucks weren't able to capitalize on anything. And I'm not even saying that they had to go sign Taylor Hall this offseason. Oh, this is a missed opportunity. But man, it's just one of many. Like, the possibilities are endless. You just look at what other teams are doing, and I'm sorry, but that should frustrate fans. Like Botch said, this market deserves a good hockey team, and right now they don't have one.
Yeah, I think you're bang on, and I think it's because of, unfortunately, where Jim Benning's gotten this team to a point right now. I mean, a lot of mistakes have gotten them here. They weren't able to capitalize on a tough free agent year where you were able to get Taylor Hall for a decent amount of, you know, not a huge amount of money, and like you mentioned, a 1-year deal. Like, that situation set up. And to speak on Louis Erickson for a second, he's been on the ice for 47 minutes. He has one assist, so he passed and then got off the ice because he hasn't been on the ice for a goal yet. But he still has the one assist where he was off the ice for the goal, but he got an assist after making the change. I think that's insane to see. I don't even know really where to go, because it's like a team that puts up a record like this and plays like this and is this place in the standings. Like, you look at the LA Kings. Like, look at the LA Kings and look what they have coming up in their pipeline, right? Because they're not a great team, right? They're not a great team. They have a lot of investments in what they have coming in the future. What do the Canucks have coming? Like, what do the Canucks have coming in the next 2 years that's going to make an impact on their NHL roster? Like, Mikey DiPietro, he'll be ready to be a backup in 2 years. Vasily Podkolzin, he's probably a top six player in the next 2 years. Jack Rathbone, maybe he pans out to be a top four guy in the next 2 years. But, like, after that, you want to have positives about Cole Lind. You're liking what Carson Folk is doing right now. You know, even some guys like Aiden McDonough and Victor Pearson might have some upside, but really, not a lot. Like, you look at what the LA Kings have and what they're icing right now for an AHL team. Like, it's unfortunate to be in this spot because, like you said, like, this city really deserves a team that is as committed to winning as the fan base is, really. Because the fan base wants winning so bad. You see it on social media. There's no other sports social media like Canucks Twitter. Like, there's a reason why Canucks fans are so invested in this team, and it's because of the community that this team has been able to build online. And it's just unfortunate that the management group can't build a group as strong as what the social media group has built. I mean, it's unfortunate, and I think that it's weird to have this conversation in the middle of the season, because like there's a lot of things that we'll definitely be talking about as the season goes on. You know, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson's contracts coming up, Travis Green, as you mentioned, like the situation just, it doesn't look good with a lot of things that are going to come in the next couple of years here. This next run of games and the next way that this season kind of ends, there have to be some decisions on what this team is going to be for the next, you know, 5 years. I really think like the 5-year plan with Elias Pettersson, with Quinn Hughes, with Brock Besser, with your head coach, with your general manager, there's so many decisions that need to be made before the season ends, because you can't just end this season and then, you know, let Jim Benning go and let Travis Green go and let this new general manager come in and have to sign Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and make these moves. Like, I think they need to act quick. Like, they need to be proactive with this. Like, they can't just let this go into the off season and then be like, okay, like, here's a full new management group. We got a draft in a month. You also have to sign our two franchise players in the next 3 weeks. And it's like, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made, and a plan really needs to be laid out, because the plan that was laid out 7 years ago when Jim Benning was hired has not worked. It just has not worked. Yeah, you've landed Pettersson, you've landed Hughes, you've landed Höglander, you've landed Podkolzin, and these are exciting players, but the plan just hasn't, like, the plan that was laid out wasn't to get those players, obviously. Like, things have changed, and there needs to be a new plan right now for 5 years out, and that's just where I just don't know if Jim Benning's the guy to make that 5-year plan, because that's a 12-year plan, right? Like, at the end, like, 12 years of Jim Benning, could you imagine?
Honestly, I can. Like, I can start to imagine it.
That's the crazy thing. You can imagine it. It's crazy.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I think that's a good time to catch a break. We'll dwell on that for a little bit. Maybe we'll come back, chat about it a little more. But on the other side of these advertisements from our great friends, you're going to hear Corey Hurgot on Riding the Bus. So keep it locked and keep it loaded on Canucks Conversation. Zephyr Epic is Canada's source for trading card games and sports cards. They ship free anywhere in Canada on orders over $50, and you can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON with a capital H and a capital S, all one word, HOCKEYSEASON, to get $5 off your order exclusively for Canucks Conversation podcast listeners. Be sure to join them live on Twitch for epic case break openings. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Zephyr Epic, Zephyr Epic, on all platforms.
Do you ever have a long work day where you just forget to hit the liquor store on the way home and then you got no beer for your game? Well, problem solved, folks. Same day delivery now from the folks at Parallel 49 Beer. That's right, the P49 crew is here and available on Uber Eats. All that brew directly to you with Uber Eats and Parallel 49's online store. Shop.parallel49brewing.com or check out more information on their Twitter and Instagram pages at Parallel49Beer.
The pandemic and a slow economy are making it tough on a lot of people to find steady, good-paying work. But one industry is bucking that trend. Construction companies are hiring and need more workers than ever before. Upload your resume to icba.ca and get noticed. With more than 3,000 employees on our ICBA team, our employment network can connect you to businesses crewing up for the 2021 construction season. Trades jobs that pay well, offer excellent benefits, invest in safety training, and give a firm career foundation. Check out icba.ca/jobs.
All right, short and sweet one here for our friends at Mike's Hard Lemonade. The Blue Freeze. If you haven't tried it, folks, you need to get out and try the Mike's Hard Blue Freeze. By far, my favorite alcoholic beverage on the market right now. If you're going to just enjoy a few drinks at a game, or it's a Saturday night and you got a Zoom party with some of your friends, take yourself down to the BC Liquor Store, or your local liquor store, wherever you get drinks. Pick up some Mike's Hard Blue Freeze, the best, tastiest drink on the market right now.
We'll be right back. play by Zach McEwen, who draws the Comets to within one. A little shimmy shake. Lynn with a shot, and he scores! Cole Lynn with a second in as many games in the Comets tied at one. My town.
Oh, mama, when you come on down, won't you come on down, Lazard?
All right, guys, joining me now, it's time for the midweek special. Now it's Riding the Bus with Corey Hergott. Corey, how you doing on this Monday? We kind of mixed it up a little bit here with the recording day.
I'm doing well, Chris. Been a busy handful of days here of writing and interviews and writing some more, and having a heck of a fun time doing it, and happy to be back and talking Comets with you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I want to start right there. I mean, we were going to talk about it later, but let's just get right into it with the interview that you had with Jalen Chatfield. I just tweeted it out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to hear you tell stories, right? And not just write about stories, but really tell stories that you're able to kind of go into from the relationships he's built around the Utica Comets over your years of covering. And you kind of started with a big one this week about Jalen Chatfield, and I just want to kind of get your opinion on what made you decide to write that article and how it kind of came together.
Well, you know, it's Black History Month. February is Black History Month, and you know, Jalen is a player I've been covering since I started writing about hockey. He came in to the Comets the same time I started covering the team, right. So he's a player that I definitely keep tabs on, and you know, he's a guy that I've been able to speak to once before at training camp in Victoria, and he's very, very what's the word I'm looking for, when he answers his questions, he's very thoughtful with how he answers. He doesn't just you don't get a canned answer from him generally, and you know, he's a very, very bright kid, and I kind of thought, you know, I wanted to give him a chance to speak on this if it was something that that he wanted to speak on. I kind of, the way I put it to him when we first opened the conversation was that, okay, Jalen, I don't want you to, you know, to relay anything that you're uncomfortable speaking about, but I also don't want you to worry about whether or not you make our readers uncomfortable. Like, that's fine. If people are reading this and it makes them uncomfortable, we're probably accomplishing something here. Yeah. And, you know, he was very kind of measured in his answers and thoughtful in his answers. And I came away feeling, you know, this is a guy that I use this term a lot, but this is a guy that gets it. This is somebody that's been raised with a set of values that have allowed him to be successful, you know, not only as an athlete, but as a person, as a good human being. I mean, to be able to sort of just turn the other cheek when, you know, you've got somebody trying to use the color of your skin against you as a weapon. And, you know, Jalen was the tone in his voice when he said this particular kind of sentence, it spoke volumes with me, because he said, like, to judge a person because of the color of their skin or where they were born is crazy. And like the way he said the word crazy, he just said it all. Like, I mean, really, you've got no control over where you're born or what language your family speaks or what color your skin is. There's zero that you can do to control that. It's all about the person's heart and the person's mind. Those were Jalen's words as well. And you know, he gets it. This is a situation where a guy came up. He's got his mother is black and his father is white, and so I'm sure, you know, he probably had some discussions over the dinner table growing up, you know, learning some things from them, having to go through what a biracial couple likely has to go through. Sure. Back when they, you know, back when things weren't quite as tolerant as they are now, even. So to me, he comes across as somebody who's been, you know, raised well and who is because of that, he's well equipped to deal with these kind of things and not let it affect him. That was, you know, he said that I'm better than that. I'm not going to let somebody else's words affect me. It has nothing to do with the game of hockey.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up that exact quote you brought up, so thanks for doing that for me. But I'll bring up the one before, just the sentence right before that I wanted to kind of touch on. I thought some powerful words from him. He said, "I never really noticed black, white, Asian, or whatever. Everybody is the same. It's about the heart and the mind." And that's, I think, what you're kind of speaking to on a guy that just seems to get it. Not only as a hockey player, but get life. Like, get out of respect other people in life, it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes back to being a genuinely good human being. And I mean, if you're at the point, you know, we're speaking about hockey here, but even in life, if you're at the point where you have to look at a person, identify something about that person that is different from you and use that as a reason to mock them or to denigrate them or put them down, you know, you're on the losing end.
Yeah.
You're on the losing end right away. And the person who is big enough to, you know, take that and, you know, just say, you know what, that's your nothing that you're saying affects me. I'm not gonna let that happen. So he's a strong, willed person. He's got a strong character. And I think that says a lot about the fact that, you know, he's an undrafted kid who's, you know, been able to make a pro career in hockey and he's played some games at the NHL level. And I'm pretty sure we haven't seen the last of him there yet either.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. And to transition, I guess, from another guy who's graduated from the Comets onto the NHL, we'll just get your thoughts on this because this is another guy who came in at the same time you started covering the Comets. What'd you think of the McEwen fight last night, Corey? I'm sure you were, I saw some of the McEwens on social media getting pretty excited about it. I'm sure you were with them with that.
Well, I mean, I've said this before, and I'll say this first and foremost. I don't think that Zach McEwen has to go out and be a fighter in order to have a spot on this hockey team. I think that there's more to his game than throwing fists. That said, you know, this is something that I tweeted out last night, and it's something that I feel pretty strongly about. You've got a player who's lucky if he crests 7 minutes in a game. He's often a healthy scratch this year, and I mean that he's a young guy making his way in the league. That's going to happen. But for a guy to have to sit and watch game after game after game, and you know, his first or second shift or whatever that was, he goes out there and you know, takes care of business, because you know that we've heard for years this team needs pushback. It doesn't always have to come in the form of throwing fists, but you know, I think something probably needed to be done about that situation. It didn't necessarily have to be a, you know, like a staged fight or whatever the case may be, but Zach answered the bell. He did it quite well. You know, I'm I used to like fighting in hockey. I'm not as big a proponent of fighting anymore, but I do still get excited when I see, you know, two large guys, you know, they call it the code in hockey. They're doing what they feel they have to do, you know, to kind of keep their spot in the lineup or to do their job or to play their role. Mm-hmm. And, for a guy like Zach, who, you know, maybe doesn't get as much shine, to just come into the game and, you know, do that, and you saw him. It was a job. He laid the beating on the guy, and then there was no emotion on his face. He just turned around and skated to the box, and you know, he's going out there and doing his job, and he didn't get a ton of ice time after that either. So you know, I feel like players like that are guys that help bring a room together. Players like that are needed on a team who, it's not about them, it's about the team, and that was everything that Zach McEwen did last night. Was he didn't go out there and fight Derek Forbort because Zach McEwen likes to go out and fight. He went out there and did that because, you know, that was the code, and that was something that he felt needed to be done, and as I said, he handled himself well.
Yeah, well, he did it for the team, right? I mean, he did it for the team at that point. And you saw, like, you saw the Nils Höglander video, I'm sure, on social media. It looked like he was a kid about to get his first puppy. I mean, he was loving that McEwen went out there and stuck up for him. But we'll translate now to, transition back to the Utica Comets here. I think the biggest news from last week, and obviously we'll have the two games and we'll touch on those a little bit, but the big news for me is going to finally now get to see Jack Rathbone play some professional games. We're not exactly sure. I'm sure that tomorrow at the media availability we'll find out more about when he is going to make his debut, but what do you think the impact is going to be with a guy like Jack Rathbone coming into this Comets lineup? And I'll let you expand on it a little bit and say maybe where you think he will fit and which guy he might pair up with moving forward now.
Well, I think my understanding is with the quarantine that he has to do and everything, he would actually be eligible to play on Friday when they play Friday and Saturday this week. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we're going to see him go straight into games. I think we might see the team work with him for a few practices first, just to kind of familiarize himself with the systems and that end of things. It's entirely possible that we do see him play this weekend, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's the following week when we see him make his debut. As far as what he brings, you know, you've seen a lot more of his game play than I have, but you know, you've got an offensive player, a guy with some speed. The Comets, their defensive end of the game is a part that needs the most work. I haven't seen enough of Rathbone play to know what his defensive game might translate to, you know, in his first handful of games at the pro level. But I'm excited to see him there. You know, they've only got seven defensemen in Utica, so yeah. I kind of had a feeling at some point we were going to see somebody, whether it be another player from the St. Louis system or a PTO brought in from the ECHL or something. But I kind of had an inkling that we'd be seeing somebody else show up there before too long. You know, he's a left shot guy. They only have Tyler Tucker and Josh Tevez there currently as left shot guys. And Tevez hasn't played the last couple of games. They've been using righties on the left side. So, you know, it might stabilize things a little bit for the Comets. It's going to help their offense for sure. I think Rathbone could have possibly an Olli Juolevi type effect on what happens there this year. You know, Juolevi came in his first year and was fantastic. 13 points, I think, in his first 18 games before he got injured. Mm. I think it's possible that we see something similar from Rathbone. You know, they've been using Mitch Ranke on their first power play unit. That might continue, but maybe you see Rathbone slide into that second unit spot instead of Steve Santini. That would be maybe a nice spot for him to work with some of his fellow Canucks prospects there, because Gajovic and Folk and spend time on that second power play unit. So I could see that being a spot for him. I'd like to see him worked in on the penalty kill if that's something, you know. I think every defenseman should be rolled into that role throughout their time at the AHL level. I think that's kind of an important thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that happen with him. I'm not sure if it'll be, you know, right out of the gate, or if that's something that we see after he's had, you know, a handful of practices under his belt where they try him out, you know, on the PK there first before they, you know, shift him into game action.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw so much of him at training camp and just thought, like, this guy moves like an NHL player. Like, he moved like an NHL player. He had confidence like an NHL player. I've been banging the drum, I think, for a while now, just to say that I think putting him into the Canucks lineup would have been a good decision. So I think to that degree, I am just so excited to see what he's able to do in the AHL and play with these Comets players, because I really think that he looks like he's very close to the NHL. So to finally get him into some game action is going to be great for you and me, man. I think we're going to love what we see from Jack Rathbone as we're watching him. And to that degree, like you mentioned it, that they have seven defensemen in the Utica Comets organization right now. We just saw Nathan Walker and who else just got called up?
Dakota Joshua.
Yeah, so Joshua got called up as well. In a year where we look at the roster and we don't see a lot of players, I guess, you know, reserves, guys that aren't playing in games, I'm just curious, Corey, like, maybe if you can fill me in and our listeners as well, like, where are the next group of players really going to come when Utica starts to lose more players, or maybe we see some injuries? Because I don't see a lot of guys that are just healthy scratches for this team, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of guys every game. There's so far, there's been obviously at least one defenseman each game who's been sitting. It's Josh Tevez has been the guy for the most part. And it's I don't have it in front of me, but there's a couple of forwards sitting each game as well. Vincent Arsenault hasn't played the last couple of games. I want to say there's a fellow there named Tanner Kaspic who played, I think, one game. I don't think he's played much since then. So they do have a couple of bodies there. But I think what's going to happen if you – I mean, I'm getting off here for a little bit. But Nathan Walker was called up, as you said, and Curtis McKenzie missed both games last week for the birth of his first child. But he'll be back in the lineup. So that's going to be a bit of a swap of those two. You know, McKenzie comes back while Walker goes out. But, you know, Dakota Joshua, that guy, he was that fourth line was pretty solid the last couple of games and brought a lot of energy. And so good for that kid to get called up. He's been a kind of fun to watch for a guy that I've never really heard of before. But I think getting back to your question, where are these guys going to come from if they need to bring in more players? Well, you're probably going to see, you know, a player or two brought in from the ECHL on a PTO, on a tryout deal. And, you know, I don't know that we're going to see a whole lot more coming down from Vancouver. I think with Jace Haarluck, I think he's close to return. So I think they will have to make a move there. Like somebody will have to go... like he'll have to get waived back to the taxi squad again or to Manitoba or to Utica, or maybe they'll shift a different player and keep him on the taxi squad. So I think there will be there's a possibility anyway that another Vancouver prospect or player could end up down in Utica within the next, you know, week or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear, because I think we've liked a lot of what we've seen from these prospects so far. And the one guy I want to talk about more, because I really think he's been dominant on the ice. And to a degree, like jumping in as a center in this league, he's done an excellent job, I think, in the faceoff dot so far. And you probably know who I'm talking about now with Carson Folk. So 16 shots for the guy leading the team right now in shots on net. I like what he's doing on that second power play unit. I think the addition of Jack Rathbone, like you kind of floated a little bit earlier there, that's just going to make that second power play unit more dangerous, because we've already seen power play goals from Gadjevich. We've seen that second unit look pretty dangerous at times, and I'm excited to see what they can do. But man, is Carson Folk, like we talked about it last week, who's surprising you more, Folk or Wu? For me, like it was another big step for Folk from the two games that we saw this past week.
Yeah, he picked up a pair of assists this week. I believe it was a pair of assists. You know, and like you said, 16 shots on goal that he's been credited with so far this year to lead the team. And, you know, you see one of the power play goals, Yashik. There's the other guy that I couldn't remember. Yashik is on that second power play unit as well, for as far as Canucks guys go. But, you know, Yashik wins a face-off, draw back, and Folk just hammers the puck on net, and Gadjevich, Jonah on the spot, doing his job and bangs it in. And we'll, you know, we've seen Folk out there. Like you said, he can move. He's skating around really well, keeping up to the run of the play there. And you know, you got a speedy line mate like Will Lockwood there on one side, and you've got a bruiser on the other side in Gadjevich. Those three really complement each other well. That line plays well together. And I know you brought it up in last week's post game when you talked to Jonah about that and about how he thought of Carson Folk's game and how he thought about, like, what he thought about playing with him. And he's like, yeah, I like playing with that guy. He's a good dude. You know, just the tone of, again, I put a lot into the tone of when a player says something, how enthusiastic or unenthusiastic they are when they say it. And to me, that was a pretty clear indication that Jonah really does enjoy playing with a guy like Carson Folk. And like you said, he's a young guy, and he's come in and he's not really looked out of place. He's stepped in and he's playing a role on this team. And I mean, we see in Vancouver how important a third line center is to a team, to be able to actually roll lines and to be able to, you know, put players out there in the right positions. And when you've got a kid that's able to hang in that role with two other kids on his line, line. I mean, that speaks well for you know what he's going to bring to this team in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that you talked about just a couple of weeks ago, that it is going to be tougher for the defenseman to make that adjustment in Jet Wu. But we're seeing some physical things out of him, and I think there's some positives. But I want to skip the Wu, Gadjevich, and Lynn talk this week, because we're going to do it deeply next week, and I don't want to do it every single time you come on the show here. So appreciate your insight on the comments forwards here, and talking about Jalen Chatfield a little bit as well. Let's look forward to this weekend coming up. We have two games this weekend. We have Friday against the Rochester Americans and Saturday against the Syracuse Crunch. The big story for me is if we are going to see Rathbone in those games or not, you know, maybe even just one of the two. But for you, what are some of the storylines that you want to see, or maybe you want to see a player take another step this weekend coming up here in this back-to-back?
Well, I mentioned it in my comments weekly wrap-up here for Canucks Army that came out on Sunday. Cole Lynn's offense dropped off a little bit over the past week, but he looked to be a little bit more engaged in his own end and in the neutral zone than he had been. Face-offs are still a work in progress, but as you pointed out, he's making some adjustments in his game to try to help with that, switching from lefty to righty when he's taking face-offs, and he's finding a little bit of success there. So that's a kid that's working hard to you know, get past the issues that he's facing right now. So I'm looking forward to seeing Cole take another step on the defensive side of things, and I'm hoping to see him kind of bring the offense back a little bit as well. I'd like to see Will Lockwood, start to produce a little bit more offensively. I mean, we've spoken how that'll come from his being defensively sound. I am looking forward to seeing if what happens with Jet Wu this week. Is he going to be the odd man out when they bring another defenseman in? He's played out of position the last couple of games on the left. And hey, that's something else that we spoke a little bit with Trent Cull about last week. I know you said you don't want to talk too much about Wu or whatever, but yeah. It is something that I brought up with the coach after the game, because Wu had in their first game of the week there, they were up a couple of goals, and Jet Wu made a bad pass. It ended up becoming a goal against on the power play, and then he followed that up with a kind of an ill-timed penalty and put his team down. And we still saw Trent Cull roll him out there near the end of the game, killing a penalty, trying to take the game home. And I brought it up and asked if that was a situation where they're specifically doing that to help keep his confidence up, or if it was just his turn up, or what the deal was. And like Cull said, when they have the opportunity this year, like they were up by two goals at that point or whatever it was, and so they could afford to throw him right back out there. They don't want to punish him too hard for making a couple of mistakes. They don't want to crush his confidence. So it was good to see them throw him right back out there and allow him to, you know, bounce back from his mistakes, and seeing how players react in that situation. Mm. You know, that's just as important to me. Even if the team wins or loses, or if the player's having a bad game, it's just seeing how they react to that bad game, and when the coach challenges them back right away to get right back out there. And, you know, I think that Wu showed well enough there and played well enough the next game, too. So he's a guy that's going to be one to keep an eye on. This weekend, it'll be interesting to see how the offense goes. We've seen this team, be pretty handy at scoring goals. So I think we're going to see that continue. I'd love to see Rathbone get in there. I'd love to see him get at least one of these two games in, if not both. But I'm not 100% sold that we'll see that happen.
Yeah, and to go back to what you said about that Wu, not only to hear that quote from Trent Cull, but to see him actually physically put Jet Wu back on the ice. Like, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it and also say it. And I thought that's something that Trent Cull did in that game, right after you mentioned a couple of, I don't want to say bonehead, but bad situations for Jet Wu. I mean, he gives up the goal pretty much primarily his fault on a bad giveaway, and then takes a penalty right after. But you said it. I mean, Trent Cull goes right back to the young kid, the 20-year-old defenseman, and he's back out there for regular shifts. Doesn't sit him out like, you know, we've seen, I guess, some young players maybe get it in the past. Like, I remember, I don't want to bring him up too much, but the cold open stuff. Like, you know, when Goldie scores that first goal, leaving the zone too early, and then is sat for the rest of the game. But we've seen that with young players in this organization, and it's one thing to say it.
and talk about it in media, but it's another thing to do it. And I thought Trent Call did a good job of getting Wu right back out there after his mistake to kind of learn from that mistake, right? So that was a great setup there in the end. So we'll wrap things up there. Corey, appreciate you giving me some more of your time here on this Monday night. And we'll get the episode out fresh tomorrow for people to listen to. So thanks for doing this, and let's have a good weekend this weekend with some Comets hockey here.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate coming on again. And yeah, it should be a couple of pretty good games this week for us to talk about next week as well. And, you know, it's kudos to you for getting on to these Zoom calls as well with the Comets. We get to talk to them once a week after a practice on a Tuesday. And you know, it's kind of nice having another face, another voice from the Vancouver market there to ask some of the questions too, because when you're one guy there and you've got you know, four or five or six other writers that are you know, radio guys or whatever, we don't always get to get our questions in, so sometimes it's nice having two of us there to get our questions in on those Zoom calls. So yeah, good for you to get that done, and I enjoy that little, I think that helps us bring a little bit more to our conversation each week here as well.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, who's going to ask Gadjevich about Trent Cole's mustache if I'm not there?
Well, see, that was great because you asked Jonah about the mustache and I asked the man himself. That was the first thing I brought up with Trent Cole. He was surprised that he didn't know yet that we had seen his mustache in the intermission. So he was a little bit shocked when I brought it up. He's like, how do you know I have a mustache? I have a mask on. Nobody's supposed to know that. So
yeah, no,
yeah,
no.
It was pretty funny. And hey, when the coach is out there, you know, sporting a Lanny McDonald, Wyatt Earp kind of looking mustache, I'm all for it. I'm a big facial hair kind of person. So
yeah,
good on the coach. It looks good.
Absolutely. And for people that haven't seen it, because people probably haven't, you did post a picture of it, I think, right, on your Twitter a while ago, so maybe might have to dig that up.
Yeah,
a little
there's
bit.
If you go through my Twitter account, you'll see a picture, just a screenshot I took of Trent Call with his mustache during an intermission interview.
Good stuff. Well, yeah, he's got a lot going on with the flow that he's growing now, and now the mustache. I mean, he's a busy man with what's going on with his hair situation, I'll say that.
Yeah, I think that's what he said. Because of COVID, he hasn't been to the barber for a while. So yeah, so it's the coach has got the flow going. He's got the stash going, and you know, he's giving some young kids some pretty important minutes in Utica this year. So as long as that's happening, I say keep the flow, keep the stash, and let's keep these kids playing.
Absolutely, and we'll keep chatting with you every single week, Corey. Thanks for doing this, and we'll chat again next week, man.
Thanks, Chris. Talk to you later.
All right, we've calmed down a bit. Thank you so much to Corey Hergott and to all of our sponsors. We really appreciate everybody's support. We've seen a lot of people, you know, like our numbers have gone up. It's been great. And we have seen some people subscribing to the Patreon, which is pretty exciting. So now's a good time to probably plug that Patreon. The $5 and $10 tier gets you all the bonus content. The bonus content typically, it changes. It really does change. You might get me playing clarinet. I'll give you fair warning, though. Or you're going to get Faber and Quads Shoot the Bleep. And that is where Chris and I just talk about non-hockey stuff, kind of talk about what's going on in our lives, probably complain about school for about 10 minutes each episode. It's a lot of fun. People seem to like those. I don't know why. Like, I don't think we're that interesting, Chris, but people like to hear the behind the scenes and like kind of how the sausage gets made.
Yeah, I had a really fun Patreon last week, like talking about the things that we did as kids that got us in the most trouble. That was a lot of fun. And you know, talking about how you were just such a perfect kid growing up and not getting in trouble ever was a fun Patreon episode. So yeah, if you haven't checked it out, patreon.com/CanucksConvo. I think it's in the bio on the Canucks Convo
Twitter
account as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the funny thing. So the topic that we talked about was what we did as kids that we got the most trouble for. And I couldn't think of anything. So I asked my mom and she said, and I quote, "Probably just you were too independent. You used to try and make plans with your friends when you were really young without running it by me first." That was what she came up with when I asked, what did I get in the most trouble for? And I don't even remember getting in trouble for that. I was like, oh, I don't know. It was just funny because we were talking about how I was such a perfect kid and just an absolute angel. And yeah, that was the response from my mom, which was really, really funny.
Yeah, so if you want that kind of non-hockey talk, we keep it on the Patreon. But it's been a lot of fun, and we'll be pumping out one of those definitely this week as well, since we're recording on Monday night and releasing this on Monday night. We'll have a Patreon for you guys midweek or later in the week as well, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, let's wrap it up here with some more Canucks talk because we came out pretty negative there. Like, we went into break, didn't feel good about myself. We were negative, we were ripping this team. And here's the thing is, like, I don't think we're negative, but, like, people have also reached out. I've had people who, like, I'll write something negative when the team's playing poorly. Like, oh, I didn't know you were like this. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, first of all, I came in when the team was doing really well. Like, that's kind of when we started. So for people to be like, oh, you guys are super positive, like, when the team's doing well, of course we're going to be positive. Like, you know, you and I, just the way we are, I don't think either of us is ever going to look for a reason to be upset or look for something that to critique. Like, oh, we got to stay on brand. We've got to be negative about something. Like, that's not how it is. But it's like, right now, I think it's harder to find something to be positive about than it is to be just talk about the team as they are. And the reaction toward this team right now should be a negative one. Like, there are very few bright spots, but I don't know. I want to move past the negativity here. So let's look for something positive. Chris, what has been the most positive thing about this Canucks season, and why is it Nils Höglander?
Yeah, well, here's another positive for you. If the Canucks finish with a 9-21-4 record, they are the odds-on favorite to win the draft lottery. So that's exciting. But yeah, Nils Höglander is everything that I hoped he could have been, and still shocks me to this day. But that smile that he had on his face, and great job by the broadcast showing it, but like his smile watching him when Zach MacEwen was beating the crap out of Derek Fortnite, like that was just an incredible little clip right there. So great to see him get excited about it. Like, I think I joked about it with Corey, like it looked like a kid getting a puppy for the first time. Like, he was so happy on the bench. And I think that's the thing. I think I tweeted this out the other day, but like, we're seeing Nils Höglander go into so many physical board battles. And to me, what I'm seeing is like, he's just like shocking the guy that he goes up against, right? Because like, Nils Höglander is an absolute force at his height. Like, he probably just shocks people with how strong he goes into each board battle, not only with his stick, which I think he's just elite at. And I saw that at the SHL level of how good he was at just pulling pucks out in the battles with his blade of his stick. But now he's bringing that physical side at the NHL level. And like I said, just shocking people. I think when he bumps into them, you know, like if you were to come out to me on the street and bump into me, it wouldn't do much of damage. But I feel like a guy of similar height to you and Nils Höglander, if he bumped into me, I'd be like, yo, okay. And that's no slight at you, Quads. I know you're bulking on the weight to get to the Nils Höglander level, but I'm sorry, man. You're never going to have legs like what Höglander has.
No, I know I'm not. I know I'm not. Even though, actually, no, I'm not going to get into this. This is Patreon talk. But yeah, you know, you're right. Like, Höglander surprises everybody. And the thing is, like, I think my favorite thing about this is every time Travis is asked about him, he refers to him as a good little player. And I just love that. Cause it's like if I played professional hockey, that's exactly how I'd get described. They'd be like, yeah, he's a great little player. Like, you know, at past jobs I've had, they're like, yeah, he's a great little worker. And I'm like, man, like that was when I was in construction though. So everybody was like bigger than I was. But yeah, that was, that's always something that makes me smile whenever Travis refers to him as a good little player. But yeah, I mean, there's no question it's Nils Höglander, and I guess this kind of segues perfectly into prospect talk. But
well, let me go, man. There's one thing I wanted to talk about, and I really noticed it being at the rink and seeing it from a different angle. And we see it so much, like Elias Pettersson ripping that slap shot on the power play. Can we talk about the power play for a minute here? We got some time.
Absolutely, we have time.
Okay. And this is, you know, Tony G brought this up in the interview, the most recent one that we had Tony Gallagher on the show. There seems to be something off between the Quinn Hughes pass to Elias Pettersson, right? Like, it feels like a lot of the one-timers and a lot of the shots and a lot of the puck possession comes between JT Miller on the left side and Quinn Hughes on the top. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think getting Quinn Hughes to rip that shot is a good thing. I think getting Quinn Hughes to shoot more on the power play and funnel shots towards the net is a good thing. But you see it with a left-handed shot on the top. And I'm not calling for Tyler Myers to be on the first power play unit, but there's something off right now about the passes from Quinn Hughes to Pettersson. And I know that Pettersson is definitely a little bit picky on what passes he's going to take his shot on with the one-timer, because if it's not almost perfect, like it has to be like in a little 1 foot kind of margin of him getting that slap shot off. But a lot of the times you get a pass from Quinn Hughes over to Elias Pettersson, and I noticed it so much yesterday being at the rink and actually seeing the power play work, that You just need more. Like, you need more of those Pettersson one-timers, and I think that should be the key on this team, because if you look at what this power play is able to do, obviously that Bo Horvat area, and people have kind of keyed on that a little bit and put more man on him, but there's a lot of times where that Pettersson one-timer is open, and I think that's the most dangerous way that this power play scores. And unfortunately, because of some passes that aren't great from Quinn Hughes going over his way, you're not getting enough of these one-timers from Pettersson. I don't know if you've been able to see similar thing on the ice, but just being at the rink, like, it was something that really just popped as I was watching it yesterday.
On that note, I almost went and tweeted this out, but I didn't really know how to word it properly, so I'll try and do it on the podcast. When I was at the rink, at the end of the skate, or the warm-up skate, Quinn Hughes was out with Elias Pettersson late, and they were trying to make these passes. Like, Pettersson was set up on the wall, Quinn Hughes at the point, and he's just feeding Pettersson passes to take one-timers. Elias Pettersson missed both of the one-timers he tried to take, and he had to take, like, six passes from Hughes that he had to turn back the other way and pass back to Hughes because it wasn't good enough. And, man, that's with nobody on the ice and just them. Like, I get Pettersson needs the perfect shot for him to pull off the one-timer and for it to be an effective, hard one-timer. I get that. But, man, like, what changed from last year? Because it looked like Hughes was doing that no problem. All he had to do was put it onto Pettersson's tape, and he was doing it no problem last year. But now you're seeing these struggles. So it's really interesting that you pointed that out, because I did notice that in the warm-up skate, and I was going to tweet it, but I, again, didn't know how to word it properly.
Well, and it's funny because it's not just because of a lefty passing to a lefty, because you see it in Washington with a righty passing to a righty in Carlson and Ovechkin. And I know that that's a veteran group there that's a lot different, but, like, do you think that needs to be more of a focus for the Canucks' first power play unit, is just getting those shots from Pettersson? Because that's what I'm seeing. Like, you need to have your most dangerous weapon firing as often as possible, and I'm just not seeing that from the power play right now.
You know what I would like to see a little more is JT Miller shoot the puck more. He's not getting a ton of shots on goal, and he's got a really good shot. He can get it off in a hurry. I would like to see, it seems like he's going for that extra pass a little too much. Like, that's one thing I've kind of noticed over these games, is JT Miller really wants to make the perfect pass, and sometimes he just puts the extra pass out when he doesn't really have to. And I don't know, like, you'd like to see Pettersson shoot the puck more. Yes, that's the obvious one, but I think Miller's a guy as well who really needs to start shooting the puck when he's given the opportunity to.
Yeah, I like when Miller gets that kind of wind up where he gets some speed going into the power play, even if he leaves the zone for a quick split second to gain that momentum. Like, that's great. That's another weapon, right? But I don't know. To me, I saw a lot of passes from JT Miller where he was trying to force it across to Pettersson as well. And, like, the pass is there from Hughes to Pettersson. Like, it's there. It's just, it needs to be a better pass right into his wheelhouse to make it happen. Or maybe Pettersson needs to be the guy who can adjust and fire his shot. It doesn't have to be a perfect pass. Just, like, take the shot or at least shoot a little bit more. I feel like the power play, and they're young, right? Like, they're working through a lot of things, and the power play is going to change with, you know, Podkolzin coming in and Höglander likely working his way onto the first unit at some point in the next few years. That's the thing that's spot on, just was like, oh, you want to get that Pettersson shot so much. I mean, he rings one off the bar. It looked like it was in from where we saw in the rink. It looked like it was in. Then right after that, late in the game, he ties it up. And that's great for the Canucks, like, to have a comeback, even though they gave up a lead going into the third period. But to get the comeback goal was great. That's the only thing that kind of popped, I guess, the biggest thing for being in the arena was wanting to see more of Pettersson get that one-timer off, because it's the best and the most dangerous weapon for this power play unit.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, okay, last thing, because technically, it's about the man advantage. Last night when the goalie was pulled, why was Tanner Pearson out there and not Nils Höglander? Like, I'm sorry, but if I'm Noel Brown or Travis Green or whoever's making this decision, I'm putting Höglander out there, and it's a 6-on-4, okay? 6-on-4. And you put Höglander behind the net? Like, I don't know. It's just, we know he can pull off the lacrosse-style goal in, like, the blink of an eye. And if you give him the direction to do that, like, you tell him, Nils, you're going to go out there, and you're going to do that move, because it's 6-on-4, and they're not going to be able to cover him. They're going to have to respect the moves to the outside if he's going to make a pass to the wings or right in the slot. Like, they're going to have to watch Bo Horvat there. If they have six skaters on the ice, I don't know. Like, I was, like, trying to think about what Tanner Pearson brings to the ice that Nils Höglander doesn't on a 6-on-4, and the only thing I could think of for Pearson was puck retrievals. But then I was like, well, Hoglander's good at that too. Yeah. So,
well, I'll add that. There's one, like the way that they use that 6-on-4, they put him right in front of the net, right? And I don't think that,
yeah.
Like, I get that, you know, Pearson's done a good job. What is it? He scored more goals than any other Canucks player since he's joined the team. That's, I think
something
that's,
like that, yeah.
So that's a stat that kind of popped when I first heard that. So I get that. And I even tweeted out last night, like, why isn't Höglander on the ice? Why is it Pearson? I just, the way that it kind of, like, looking back at it, I understand because they just used him as a net front presence, right? Because you're going to have Pettersson on the right, you're going to have Besser on the left, you kind of had JT Miller floating on the top as well, so it made sense, but yeah, like, I think just the concept of it was, like, Höglander creates so many scoring chances, he's great at retrieving the puck, he just seems to me like a lock to have on the ice when you get the extra man out there, so that one kind of shocked me a little bit too, I'll be honest.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's just, you know, don't put him in front of the net. Put him wherever you want. But, man, get him out there. Mm-hmm. He's been objectively one of your best players this season. And just, again, a guy who had, what, 5 shots last night? Season high? I think he tied his season high, 5 shots. Career high, obviously. But, man, like, I don't know why you don't want that guy out on the ice. And
you know what? You just brought up something that just, like, light bulb just blew up in my brain here. But, like, okay, I've been obviously covering Höglander and Podkolzin a lot for the last 2 years, and obviously Höglander hasn't put up ridiculous numbers like we saw Elias Pettersson do in the past, but just from what you just said about Höglander, where it's like, why would you not want that guy on the ice? Like, this is what we're talking about when we're talking about a player making an impact. Because look, Höglander, what, he has 9 points this year? He's not lighting anything up, but he's been the best Canuck on a lot of nights. Right, like he's creating so much offense, he's making a change to a hockey game. And for a lot of these people that look at prospects and only look at stats and, you know, don't listen to the people like Cam Robinson or Corey Hurgot that are talking about the Canucks prospects, like, it's not about the stats for a lot of these guys until they really get to the NHL, because they're playing in different systems, different leagues, asked to do different things. It's more about just the way that they play on the ice. So I wanted to, something you just said there just kind of made me click about these prospects, like, again, I say it a lot, but like, don't just read the stats, like, try and watch some clips that are put out there, read the articles that people are putting out that they are actually watching these guys, because it's going to be a very similar thing with Podkolzin. Like, he's going to come in and he's going to make a huge difference every single night for a hockey team to have a better chance of winning a game. It's not about the points that he's putting up, but those will come eventually. It's going to be about the impact, like we see with Nils Höglander right now, changing a game and making it turn so much in the Canucks' favor when he's on the ice.
No, absolutely. You're bang on. And I don't know if you want to skip the prospect report today, because I know you've got to get to a call. But
I'll go quick. So,
okay, go for it. We got to do betting, thanks to our friends at Odd Shark.
Yeah, you betcha. So Podkolzin, he was out of action again with a concussion. He did post a picture on Instagram. He was out with his family. Nice to see. I wonder if he's getting closer. And it was nice to see him posting, you know, this feels weird to say, but it's like, it's cool to see him posting a lot more in English, you know, on his Instagram, just to kind of put it out there. And we've seen him in a recent interview speaking English and doing an English interview. So that was great to see. And we'll see what happens in the final 2 games now of the KHL for him before they go to playoffs at the end of the month. And then the only other thing, like, I talked about it a lot in the conversation with Corey. So very exciting things about Carson Folk right now. And then getting Jack Rathbone to actually play games in the AHL potentially as soon as this weekend coming up is huge for them too. So that's all I really got on the prospects report. But I do have some bets. I got some bets, Quads.
Okay, thanks for our friends at oddshark.com. Go check them out. But lay on your bets. Let's hear it.
All right. So I took some advice from our friends over at the broadcast, mostly Danny, because I know this is her catchphrase, I guess, if you want to say. No stats, just vibes. And I got to that game last night, and right before the puck drop, I said, you know what? Pettersson's going to score 2 goals. So I went with it. It was like 1,300 plus 1,300. So that's, you know, $13 on every $1. So that picked me up a nice $70 cash as I put whatever the money was down on that, and it was a nice return. I don't know, like, I've been doing a lot of betting lately on guys getting the over for shots. Like, I like Tanner Pearson really any night to have the over for his shots. I like Nils Höglander lately because he's ripping, like, he's attempting at least, like, 7 shots. Like, 7 shot attempts every game for the last, like, 5 games or something like that. So it's ridiculous to see what he's doing. So I'm kind of riding the over on that because Nils Höglander is starting to shoot the puck a lot more, which is great to see. So that's kind of my tip of the week, is take the over on Nils Höglander shots right now.
interesting because that was also mine. I put money on three. I put like $6 on him getting three shots, and again it was like plus 130 odds, I think. So I made about $7. But it was interesting because I think I told you about that glitch on Bodog. So just keep your eyes open, people, because this is some nice betting advice. They put as the over under on a prop bet for McDavid getting shots on goal in one game. It was 35, so you could pick under 35 or over 35. Obviously, they meant to put 3.5, but it was 35. So my brother put $50 on under 35, and I was like, whoa, let me get in on this. Like, I wonder what's going to happen. Like, I assumed we would just get our money back, and they'd be like, oh, we made a mistake, blah, 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 sorry. No, they honored it. So he got under 35 shots in the game, as you would expect. And my brother and I both won the bet. Like, my brother put 50 down and he got 50 because the odds were even on it too. So I put 30, I got 30 back, and I was like, oh my gosh. So you know what? Betting advice of the week is make sure you read everything really carefully and just kind of look around to see what you can find.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's probably one of the better advices because, yeah, we haven't been giving out great advice lately, but that's free money right there, so that's good. And, yeah, well, I'll stick with the shots. That's all I really got this week for the betting segment. So, yeah, I'm all good this week, Quads. I think it's been a good episode. We simmered down a little bit after a hot start to the episode, you know, smooth things over with Corey Hurgot in the middle, and then wrapped on a little bit of a positive note, I think, as we kind of finished up here. So we kind of gave everybody a little bit of everything on this midweek episode here, which we are actually dropping at the very start of the week just because of how games kind of played out and, you know, Corey's availability, everything. So we're going to have a Patreon for sure, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. One of those days we'll have it out for you guys in the afternoon when Quads and I can find a good time for both of us to record later in the week. So we'll definitely have a Patreon for everyone. Like we said earlier, patreon.com/CanucksConvo. And while I mentioned stuff, shameless plugs, we should mention again, rate and review the show as well. We always forget to say it, but we saw one come in last week blaming Corey for the 5-star review, so we appreciate that. If you have a quick second, you know, just search up the Canucks Conversation on Apple Podcasts. Click it right there and you can do a review super quick. Helps us out in some way that's really good, apparently. I don't really understand it, but it also helps out the podcast in a big way. So appreciate everyone listening. And if you got a second, maybe just give us a review. We appreciate it.
Yes, very well said, my friend. For Chris Faber, my name is David Quadrelli, and you have been listening to the Canucks Conversation.
Hello, thank you for calling Thomas Drant.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.